Welcome to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Business Spotlight is heard weekly at this time on 1450 AM and 107.1 FM. Today's guest is Dr. Timothy Krause, Assistant Professor of Finance at the Black School of Business at Penn State Barron.
You are listening to Barron Talks on WPSE Money Radio, AM 1450, FM 107.1. My guest today is Dr. Tim Krause, an assistant professor in the Sam and Irene Black School of Business here at Penn State Barron. Welcome here, Tim.
Thanks, Ralph. Good to be here.
Thank you for joining us. Well, you have, I was looking at your background. You've got an impressive record. I know we want to talk about all the great things you're doing in the classroom, particularly in the with the Intrury Student Managed Fund. But as I was looking over your bio, you came to us after working, quote, in industry in the financial services sector for a number of years. It looks like to me you probably grew up in Texas as well, graduated from University of Texas at San Antonio, also went to school at Georgetown University. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about your background? How did you end up here at Penn State Barron?
Sure. It's a fairly short, long story. After I got a degree in government from Georgetown, I decided that wasn't the career for me. I worked for a couple years, went back on my MBA at Georgetown, and started about a 25-year career in the investments industry on partially on Wall Street, mostly on LaSalle Street in Chicago, trading commodities, futures, and options. Along the way, I started teaching part-time at a couple small schools in Texas and California, actually. Eventually decided I like teaching, I want to do it full-time, so I went back and got my terminal degree and came to Barron.
Well, we're happy to have you here. And I think, you know, one of the things that about your profile that's real interesting is that you're kind of atypical, but you fit a lot of what we see at Barron, which is sometimes faculty members who have that terminal degree, that PhD, yet you've got a tremendous amount of practical experience to bring to the classroom. And one of the ways you're doing that is something known as the Intrury Student Managed Fund. Now, for those who don't know, this thing was established in 2011 by a gift from one of our generous alumni, Vince Intrury, where he gave us $100,000 to start this fund and put it to use with our students. So explain how this works. What is this Intrury Student Managed Fund? How has it grown? There's a lot to this.
Sure. As you mentioned, we started off with $100,000. The students manage the fund in three different courses, and I can get to those later when I talk about the size of the student team and what they do. But generally, it's students managing. There's about 50 students involved with the fund, managing a real portfolio that's grown through market appreciation and additional gifts to about $700,000 now.
That's impressive.
Thanks. It's all the students' work. All the students make all the investment decisions. I advise loosely, but at the end of the day, the students vote on what stocks to buy and what stocks to sell.
So walk us through that. So is this a student club? Is this voluntary? So how does a student say they come here? How do they decide they want to get involved in this first?
There's three separate courses, as I mentioned. First, there's a one-credit course, which is our associate analyst program. That's where you walk in the door at Barron. You don't know what your major is going to be. You have no idea. You've never taken a finance course. You come in, and then you help the students in the next course, which is portfolio management analysis. And that is our quote-unquote analyst class. There's usually about 10 associates per semester, 25 to 30 in the portfolio management class, and the associates help the analysts to do valuations, stock evaluations, and make the stock picks. After that, once you finish that course, you can take another one-credit course, which is our lead analyst program, students who've had experience with the fund already, who want to stay involved. So in any given semester, we probably have about 50 to 60 students participating.
Wow, and they really, so that's an impressive number. So these 50 students, and in my observation, they've developed their own set of governance, so to speak. Like you said, there are these different tiers in which they get involved. It appears to me that they elect officers, so to speak. who have a larger role in managing the fund. Is that something that they came up with and they developed this? How did that process work?
That's kind of happened since I arrived. I arrived 3 years after the fund started. And it was a little more informal back then. I decided to put in a place where the students in the lead analyst program could also be officers. They don't get any extra credit, but there's a president, chief investment strategist. That was in place when I got here. But now we have vice presidents of financial reporting, auditing, operations, and market and economic analysis. So they each have slightly different duties.
So I can imagine that, you know, so it's not just 50 students saying, hey, here are the stocks I want to pick. They take a very scientific, very reasoned approach to figuring out what's the portfolio look like. I mean, in the end, you make the purchase, so to speak, but they do all the work behind it with your guidance. And I think that that's the really fascinating piece. How do these 50 students collectively manage a portfolio?
Well, each week, several student groups, the analysts in the portfolio management class work in groups of two, and they're responsible to come up with one buy recommendation and one sell recommendation. And we have a pretty disciplined investment process where they have to go and prepare standardized research notes, PowerPoint presentations. They present to the class based on whether, let's say they're looking at Tesla, which is always popular, and it's trading for $340. If they get a valuation above $340, we'll buy it. That hasn't happened yet with Tesla, because they don't make very much money. So there's always a few that try to slip through, but we have a pretty disciplined process where we don't let that happen.
Well, they've developed, I mean, even a whole set of algorithms, somewhat proprietary. I mean, that they use to test the different reports or the different forecasts on the stocks, if I understand it.
Yeah, the main thing is the valuation. I mean, we're really a value-focused fund, which was good for several years. The last 2 years, the market's been focused on growth and technology, so we've suffered a little bit. But yeah, it's the processes they've developed since I've been here are really good. And sometimes I struggle to challenge them to do more. Because they've already done so much.
Well, they've managed to beat the average of the S&P, if I'm not mistaken. They've beaten the market most years. I'm not saying every year, but so what's the record look like there?
On average, and this is to the end of 2017. We haven't compiled the figures for 18 yet. But on average, for those 6 years, the fund's been up about 15% on average. And the S&P's been up 14%. Okay. So we're right there.
So have you ever found yourself in a situation where you really felt they were making a mistake with recommended investments and, you know, you disagreed with what they thought was a significant buy or sell recommendation?
No. I will say, though, that the students disagree with themselves. And sometimes a student will give a presentation in class, and we'll talk about it. And afterwards, I meet with the officers to decide which ones we're going to act on. And the lead analyst will say, no way, this is, we can't buy this stock. And we'll think about that, maybe do some more analysis. So I've never shot down a recommendation that I can remember, but students do.
You are listening to Barron Talks on Money Radio, WPSC AM 1450, FM 107.1. I'm Chancellor Ralph Ford, and my guest today is Dr. Tim Krause from the Black School of Business, and we're talking about the Intrieri Family Student Managed Fund. And we've already hit a number of points, Tim, about just how well this fund is doing and how it's managed, but one of the things that just fascinates everybody when they hear it is this is real money. This isn't funny money.
That's correct. And that's on the first page of my introduction to the course in big capital letters. This is real money. Because a lot of finance professors here, including myself, use simulations from time to time. But the real money aspect of it is a totally different animal.
Well, what difference does it make with the students? So why not have them just do a simulation? Why use real dollars and put that money at risk?
Well, often with the simulation, you'll just find students want to win the game. So they'll take the most risky bet possible, you know, triple levered ETF or some crazy biotech stock trading for 20 cents. Because of our investment process and the fact that they know it's real money, that doesn't happen. They're definitely more concerned about, because I still run a simulation in my class, and that was sort of, they pick a few stocks at the beginning of the semester and never look at it again. We're constantly on a weekly basis examining our portfolio and figure out where we need to trim and add.
Mm-hmm. And they take it serious because they know it has real impact.
Yes. Unfortunately, if you've been watching the markets, the past 3 months have been difficult. So especially the end of December. When the students got back, they asked me, how'd the fund do over the semester? And I told them the numbers, and they were disappointed.
Well, you know, the market can't always go up. We've had 10 straight years of pretty good times, there are always these correction times, and it's certainly a period of uncertainty, and the pros are having the same issues. So let's continue on with the impact on our students. Mm-hmm. Everyone who's, I've seen them present in a number of different venues. Mm-hmm. Just the level, you would assume that they were people who were working in this field for 5 years.
Yes, I've had actual Wall Street analysts say, or portfolio managers, I've shown them copies of our quarterly reports. They say, this is better than stuff I get from Wall Street. And that's an actual quote. So the students are very high quality. They talk about their experience in the fund during their job interviews, because a lot of students are in a catch-22. You need to have experience to get a job. Mm-hmm. You need to have a job to get experience. So students can take this, put that they were an officer in the Intrary Family Student Managed Fund, and they can talk about it because they actually did it for, you can participate in the fund up to 6 semesters.
Wow. So where are they going after they graduate that this experience has had an impact on?
It's a mix of local and national firms. Locally, we recently had a graduate go to C.S. McKee, which is an institutional asset manager, Erie Insurance as a financial analyst, Credit Suisse in New York, and PNC Financial all over the country. That's just a smattering of the firms where our students go.
So has this experience changed the way you teach the class? I mean, do you take what you've learned here, and does this go back into the curriculum?
Yes, definitely. I mean, one of the themes of the Black School of Business is learning by doing. I mean, it's a theme of Barron in general, but we focus on that quite a bit. And as opposed to the normal traditional chalk and talk method of teaching, I have 3 50-minute classes per week for this class. I'll probably spend Monday talking, showing them how to do things. Wednesday, they're working on things. Friday, they make presentations. Mm-hmm. And then the whole class is presentations, and they make the decisions to recommend buy or sell. So, I don't require a textbook for the course. I have all my own materials, so they use those. It's not read the textbook, go to class and take notes, take a test. It's totally different.
The thing that, they're just a number of things that when I watch this or when I hear the students talk about it, it's unique in many ways. And one is, I've seen them working with this, quote, Bloomberg terminal. Mm-hmm. And we have one next to the trading lab. The analysis they can do are quite fascinating. And actually, I bring in some people who are presidents of companies, and they bring up an analysis, and they're surprised at what they're able to do. Let me talk a bit about what does that Bloomberg terminal bring, and how common is this to have students working on a Bloomberg terminal while they're at a university?
Well, Bloomberg is pretty much cutting-edge financial technology. It's a huge database of information and analytics. The students use it extensively in their valuations and in their research notes. Most of the students, Bloomberg has an 8-hour course online, self-paced, where they can go through and learn how to use it. And then once they know how to use it, they can you know, put it in their research. In terms of numbers, I believe there are about 400 business schools in North America that have a Bloomberg terminal out of approximately 4,000, so 10% or less.
Yeah, so it's pretty rarefied.
Yes. And it's very expensive, so we appreciate the fact that we're able to have it.
Yeah, I know, but it's definitely worthwhile for our students to have that experience. So how do they react? How do the students react when there's a really bad day on the market? And we've had some recently, and it drops by 500 points or 3 or 4 percentage points.
Yeah, well, as I mentioned, when they came back from the winter break, they were pretty disappointed. It's interesting. You can see different investors' perspectives. One student I was talking to yesterday, this particular stock, he recommended, it's doing terribly. He said, I think we should just cut it and get out. I said, well, let's think about this. If you liked it at $50 a share, why don't you like it at $30 a share?
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to do some more analysis before we decide how to behave in that environment. Because there's investors that want to get out. There's investors that want to double down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting insight into psychology.
Do you teach them about hedge funds and how hedging works and, you know, all of those things? I realize we don't do that in the fund, but I'm curious, is that part of the curriculum?
Yes. I teach that a little bit in portfolio management in case they don't have the other elective courses. They're not required to take courses like derivatives, which I teach, fixed income securities. I used to teach energy finance, which is a lot of derivatives and financial products. That course is still offered. So it's definitely in the curriculum. And our program is designated as a CFA superior chapter. So the Chartered Financial Analyst program is pretty much like getting an MBA degree in finance. And a lot of our students pursue that. And that exam is approximately 10% portfolio management, 10% derivatives, 10% fixed income. If you take the right, quote-unquote, right set of courses while you're at Barron, you will be introduced to about 70% of the material that's in the CFA level one exam. There's 3 levels.
So they're able to take that CFA exam before they graduate?
Normally they do it in June after they graduate, but we offer 16 different scholarships, which pays for the CFA materials, which are not inexpensive. I think the total cost is about $1,500. The students end up paying $200. So they study for the exam in the last semester, normally their senior year, and take it in June. This past year, we had 5 students study and take the exam, and 4 passed, so 80%.
That's pretty good. Yeah. I'll tell you, I was meeting with one of our alumni on Wall Street just last month, actually, as it turns out. And he told me what a leg up that gives. And he was very sincere about it. He said not a lot of students come out with that because you really have to continue on to get, as you said, the additional levels. But so if they do that, what does that mean in terms of their career? So if they can go on and get the CFA, so what's that do for them?
Well, I mentioned our pass rate, which was 80% last year. I didn't mention the CFA. The overall CFA exam pass rate for last June was 43%.
Holy cow, so you just about doubled it.
Yes. So how does that impact your career? My school director could tell you better about the salary difference, but it's pretty substantial between whether you have it. After 7 years with a CFA, you make about 50% more in salary than without a CFA.
Mm-hmm. It's very significant.
Yes.
You are listening to Barron Talks, where we talk to you and have discussions with different people in the Barron community. I'm Chancellor Ralph Ford, and my guest today is Dr. Tim Krause from the Black School of Business. And Tim is the faculty advisor for the Intrieri Family Student Managed Fund. And this fund was created by two very generous alumni, Vince Intrieri and his wife, Joanne. Are they still involved?
Yes, definitely. They're eager to receive our quarterly and annual reports. They attend both our business school and our finance department advisory boards. And additionally, I normally take a few students to what's called the GAME Conference, which is Global Asset Management Education. And they always take us out to dinner, so that's nice for the students to get to talk to someone who is in the business for quite some time.
I mean, they are just very genuine, very involved, and they love to see the impact that this has. And what always impresses me, too, is I've noticed let's say we've got a student group traveling to New York City. I notice Vince and Joanne are very willing to meet with those students.
Definitely.
Provide their wisdom and give them their guidance. So no, it's they've been great stewards of this. So this has grown to $700,000, you said?
Yes.
Part of that started with the gift. I know others have given to the fund. What happens when it continues to grow? What's your goal? Do you have any dollar amount that you'd like to grow the fund to?
Well, I'd say our short to medium term plan goal is to grow to $1 million, because at that point we have a plan in place to start offering scholarships based on the fund's earnings. If we get it to $1 million and make 8%, that's potentially $80,000 in annual scholarships, which will most likely go to business students. But that would help a lot of students out with their college expenses.
I think it's a great way just to show that, yeah, we've reached this significant milestone, but then we're going to be giving back directly into the mission. So we'll support students who can continue to grow this. And so it's just a great idea to do that. So the thing that is really impressive about this is, you know, in a lot of fields, we're studying things, my area, engineering, that are well established. We certainly talk about things that are very current. But talk about real time. You've got the financial services trading lab and the ticker going. So you use that in class every day to adjust to real world conditions?
Yes. All of my classes are taught in the financial trading lab, which is a 38 seat facility. Each of one has a double screen monitor and computer. So on days when they're doing projects or making evaluations or making presentations, they can look at what the market's doing in real time. There are screens in the back of the room. They're a little hard for me to see because I'm in the front of the room, but they sit right under them, so they can see what's going on. Plus, they have the computers to pull up whatever financial website they're interested in. So, again, we're learning by doing, and having the tools in front of us makes it a lot more beneficial.
Do any of these students... They're investing in the fund, but do any of them invest personally while they're in school? Is that a typical thing?
Yes. I think in general, the finance classes that they take here at Barron, they're interested in it. I mean, by the time students get to me, most of them are in their fourth year, they're finance or accounting majors, and they're interested in this field. So I see them occasionally with their phones, looking at their brokerage account, and most of them aren't trading big dollars, but it's real money. To them, it's probably big dollars, and they're concerned about it.
Yeah,
well, they have fun.
I think as long as they do it in a response, you know, they're responsible with their funds, and they understand. But I know some of them are quite savvy, even as undergraduates, more savvy than many grown-ups I've seen, or adults, who are investing their money. Well, you had a whole career as a trader before you came to us. It looks like it's a fascinating or a high-stress or high-paced place to be on the trading floor. Do you have anything you want to share with us about your prior life and what that was like?
As I mentioned, most of my career was spent in Chicago, in the trading pits there, where I traded commodity, futures, and options. And, you know, markets have gone electronic these days. But back then, you would have 1,200 traders yelling and screaming at each other. And all the communication was done with hand signals and voices, and it was a lot of fun. So I can relate a lot of those experiences to things that you see in the market now, mistakes I've made, successes I've had. And that experience was a ton of fun. But September 11th happened, and then the markets went to decimals instead of fractions, so it became a lot harder to make a living. And it drove I mean, I consider myself an independent trader. I had a firm with 12 traders working for me. What happened was only the big firms could make money anymore mm-hmm. because I was a small independent operator. So Morgan Stanley came in and Goldman Sachs and Citadel Capital and a bunch of big firms came in and basically took over. And they said, why do I need to buy real estate in Chicago to trade on this exchange? I can do it from New York or South Carolina or wherever you want on a computer. And that's what's happened. The trading floor used to be a very loud, boisterous environment. And the last time I was there about 3 years ago, it was very quiet, which was eerie.
Mm-hmm. Do you miss it?
Yes. It was a lot of fun. It was very stressful. I like to say that I went from one of the most stressful careers you can have to one of the least stressful, mm-hmm. being a college professor, because it's pretty nice around here.
You don't find being on the tenure track stressful?
You know, it's kind of like when I was getting my PhD. I was an older PhD student, so the younger students would be, they would complain and say, oh, this is so much work, and how am I going to get through this, and it's so stressful. I said, well, if you ever work 70 or 80 hours a week in a high-stress environment, this isn't so bad.
Yeah. The thing I like to, you know, the way I like to describe how it is in academia is we get to choose where we work our 70 to 80 hours a week. Yeah. And there's a lot of flexibility in doing that. And we also get to choose, within reason, the areas of research that we look at. So what sort of research do you do?
Well, I do research into options, which was the main thing I traded my career, and also ETFs, exchange-traded funds, because that's been a high-growth area. In the last decade, ETFs are encroaching on mutual funds at a larger and larger rate. I've written 4 papers on ETFs, a couple on options and derivatives, and 2 pedagogical papers, which are, I talk about student-managed funds in one of them, actually. It was presented at a conference a couple years ago, got published by Journal of Business and Economic Perspectives, as well as one in the Journal of Financial Education. So I like to, as you say, choose where, when and where you work, and mm-hmm. I choose to do a lot of different things.
So when you look at mutual funds, the growth of them still continues, I think, to the point now where people are becoming concerned that maybe they're too large a part of the market and they're following these indices and that they won't be able to sustain in the long term. Do you see a concern there?
I mean, there have been studies, including a couple of mine, that examine the fact that the increasing amount of funds, both mutual funds and ETFs, creates additional volatility. Because people can get it used to be hard. When you were in the early 90s, you wanted to invest in the S&P 500, you had to buy 500 different stocks. So getting out of that is difficult. But if you buy an S&P 500 ETF or a mutual fund, one click of the button, you can eliminate your entire position at a very low cost. So they're going to continue because just about everybody's 401k and pension are invested in some sort of mutual funds. But there are concerns that they have great benefits, but there are also a few drawbacks.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're coming close to the end of our time. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, just thanks for having me, and this is a great opportunity.
Well, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it. And again, you've been listening to Barron Talks, and my guest today has been Dr. Tim Krause. We really appreciate you coming in today and telling us all the great things that are happening with the Intrieri Family Student Managed Fund. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Business Spotlight is heard Fridays at noon. Join us again on Sunday morning at 6:30 for an encore presentation of the Business Spotlight.